Well, here's a headline that you don't read every day. Or at least you don't expect to read it every day. Abortion foe will seek to be leader of Democrats. Now, there are a lot of pro-life Democrats. There are. Although, whether or not one will be the leader of the Democratic Party, the Democratic National Committee, is another question. We're going to be talking about yesterday's announcement by a pro-life Democrat, and this is Tim Romer, that he is seeking to become the next head of the Democratic National Committee. Kristen Day is our guest for the first 10 minutes or so of this third hour of Issues, Etc. She's from Democrats for Life. I've got a question for you when we conclude our conversation with Kristen Day. If it were, in fact, to come to pass that Tim Romer, a pro-life Democrat, were to become head of the DNC, that is a very, very influential position, especially when it comes to presidential politics and politics at the national level. It's hard to overestimate the influence of this position. Would it make any difference to you? Let's say you're a Democratic voter and you have, because of the life issue, been voting Republican or some other way for some time. Would you be more likely then, if the party was headed up by a pro-life Democrat, to vote Democratic? Or someone you know? Now, that's a question for you on the other side of this conversation with Kristen Day, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The remainder of the hour will be open lines. Another question that I've got for you, and maybe just your reaction to this. The People's Choice Awards were held. Favorite movie drama, The Passion of the Christ. Mel Gibson, we'll hear from him a little bit later in the hour, accepted a People's Choice Award for The Passion of the Christ. He, of course, directed and produced the movie, The Passion of the Christ. Favorite movie, Fahrenheit 9/11 by Michael Moore. Odd things happen at the People's Choice Award. What chance do you think The Passion of the Christ has later this month to win an Oscar? That's the real prestige award, an Oscar in any category. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Those two questions for you in about 10 minutes. Open lines, issues, etc. Kristen Day is Executive Director of Democrats for Life, based in Washington, D.C., and a regular guest here on Issues, etc. Kristen, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on again.
Well, I said at the beginning, this is not a headline that you read every day, but I'm sure it's one that you're gratified to read about Tim Romer throwing his hat into the ring to be head of the DNC. How likely do you think it is to happen?
Well, I think it's very encouraging because probably one of the main reasons he was looking at this was because the minority leader in the Senate and the minority leader in the House encouraged him to run. And I think they see that the only way that our party is going to succeed in the future is if we become more inclusive. And I think that sends a strong message.
Romer is a Roman Catholic. He is openly pro-life in a party that, as you know far better than I do, at least has the strong reputation for being pro-choice. Who's he up against?
He's up against Howard Dean might throw his hat in the ring as well, and but he also said that the party needs to be more inclusive. And why he isn't pro-life, I think, you know, the message that people are sending is that in this race is inclusiveness in the party. And also Simon Rosenberg also mentioned and that we need to be more inclusive. So I think it's a very different message that's being talked about this time versus when all the candidates for president were trying to see who could be the more pro-abortion. So I think it's a very good move for the Democratic Party.
Tell us a little bit about Representative Tim Romer and if you have any information on his record when it comes to the life issue.
He is 100% pro-life, and he is just a great member of Congress from Indiana. He retired a few years ago, and he's just terrific. I think with National Right to Life, his record is either 98 or 99%. The only reason it isn't 100 is because they scored campaign finance reform, which is, in our opinion, isn't a pro-life issue. But, he's just 100% there. And it's just very encouraging that he's running.
How do you react to this quote from Kate Michaelman? She is, of course, a leading advocate for abortion rights, and she's quoted in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch saying, quote, The election of such a staunchly anti-choice leader, referencing Romer, would signal that the Democratic Party is retreating from one of its core principles.
Right, and one of the core principles, I think, is making abortion rare, and we have done nothing to make abortion rare. I think with somebody like Tim Romer at the helm, I think the Democratic Party would start to look at ways to make abortion rare. And by saying that we're moving away from our core principles, I mean, I think Tim Romer would bring us back to our core principles that we should be focusing on instead of being known as the party of pro-abortion and abortion rights. I mean, I think we should start talking about health care and, you know, workers, working families and how we can help them. And, you know, and also the unborn, I think, is one of the things our party should be looking at as well.
So you fundamentally disagree with Michaelman when she views abortion on demand, I would say probably a fair assessment of what she's talking about there, as a core principle of Democrats.
Right. I don't think that a majority of our party believes that we should have abortion on demand. And I think, you know, a lot of people in the party have felt pressure not to just toe the party line on that. And I think it's about time that we free people up to really vote their conscience. And, you know, let's turn our party in a new direction. Yeah, it may be away from abortion on demand and toward making abortion rare, and I think that's a better message to send.
Did abortion as an issue for the voters in November 2004, did it play a role in the loss of the White House?
Oh, you know, a lot of the polls came out, and exit polls said that it did. And I know I heard from a lot of people who couldn't vote for Kerry because of the pro-life issue, and they did vote for President Bush because of the pro-life issue. So, you know, some say that it gave him an 8% President Bush an 8% advantage. If you take that 8% back, they would have had Kerry in the White House.
Then let's talk about the process. We're really talking about a party decision that's going to be taken here by the Democratic National Committee. How will the head be decided, Tim Romer or someone else?
There are 450 members, voting members, and they will be the ones to decide. But it seems like a lot of them haven't made their decisions yet, and they're still really up in the air of what will happen. I know there was a meeting down in the Southern Democrats met and heard from the candidates, and I know Tim Romer spoke down there. And, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. And I think the thing we're going to take away from this, the new chairman, I'm confident, will be more willing to work with us. Whoever it is, will be more willing to be inclusive and support pro-life Democrats and really encourage pro-life Democrats to stand up, their voices heard.
What's it been like for organizations like yours and other pro-life organizations associated with the Democrats during the tenure of Terry McAuliffe?
Not too friendly. We were working on it, and I think we started to make some progress toward the end of his tenure, but I think the next chairman will be more willing to work with us, and we're very encouraged.
One other question here, and that has to do with, this is just a little footnote at the end of the story as we wrap up our conversation, Kristen. It's also announced Sunday that Illinois Representative Rahm Emanuel, former political operative for President Bill Clinton, is named as the head of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. What is this position, and is this represent a change of any kind?
No, the head of the DCCC does a lot of is head of the fundraising and raising money for Democrats. And you know, I haven't done any work with Congressman Emanuel at all, but so I don't know what kind of change that will be.
Is money a factor here? Because we've heard from many people when asked, you know, why is it that the higher you go in the echelons of the Democratic Party, the less pro-lifers you find? The answer is often, well, it has to do with who funds campaigns.
Right. And, yeah, I mean, the pro-abortion forces have a lot of money. And I think, you know, they've had a stranglehold on our party for too long now, and I think it's time that they let go and let people vote how they're going to vote, and let's move on to more important other issues that are important for our party, you know, such as health care and Social Security, and let people who want to protect the unborn do that.
Do you think that the DNC has learned anything from the last election, and if so, what?
I certainly do think that they've learned just from the movement that's happened. You know, before the election, I think Democrats did not talk about the pro-life issue at all. And now all over Washington and the country, Democrats are starting to talk about it. And, you know, the fact that Congresswoman Pelosi and Senator Reid came out and said and encouraged a pro-life Democrat to run for the chairman, I think sends a really, really strong message to, that our party is rethinking its position.
The website for Democrats for Life is democratsforlife.org, democratsforlife.org. Kristen Day is Executive Director of Democrats for Life, based in Washington, D.C. Thank you, Kristen, again for being our guest.
Thank you so much. I look forward to talking to you.
Yes. Well, this is my question for you folks, and it is now, from this point on in the program, open lines for your questions and your comments. If Tim Romer, former Indiana congressman, pro-life Democrat, were to become head of the DNC, Kristen seems to think he has as strong a chance as anyone else who's running for that very influential position. What difference would it make to you if you are a pro-life Democrat? And I've met some recently. I've met a number in the course of the last couple of years, including Kristen and people in her organization. If you're a pro-life Democrat and you have been in various elections not voting with your party for the very reason of the pro-life issue, would it make any difference to you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Do you know of anyone who has been holding off? Maybe they were raised a Democrat. They come from a Democratic part of town or from a family, and they say, I can't do it because of the life issue. Do you think it would make a difference for them? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. How likely do you think it is to happen that the Democratic Party now, after the 2004 elections, with a bit of a wake-up call, everyone seems to be admitting, would put at the head of the party a pro-life Democrat? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Kulit keho, henkehel, kosta geede mini, a ken lakisfa.
That is an excerpt, of course, of Jim Caviezel playing Jesus Christ in the Passion of the Christ movie, which won an award during last night's People's Choice Awards for Best Drama Motion Picture. Mel Gibson was there accepting the award. Now, this is probably not unexpected. This was a box office smash. It was also highly controversial, highly hyped, highly advertised. That's just one award, of course. The big ones, the prestige awards, come a little bit later this month. They are the Academy Awards, the Oscars. How likely do you think it is, now that The Passion of the Christ has won a People's Choice Award, that it will win an Oscar? Another question for you during this 40 minutes of open lines, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Oddly enough, at the same awards event, winning favorite movie overall, Fahrenheit 9/11, by Michael Moore. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, during his acceptance speech last night, Mel Gibson, the producer, the director behind The Passion of the Christ, said that he needed support from movie fans for this controversial film.
Really, more than any other thing I've ever worked on, when you circumvent the system, I depended on you, and you were there.
Now, that's true. I remember far in advance of the movie's actual release, even before it had a distributor. Do you remember this? We were talking about it, of course. People were wondering, what's it going to be like? And then there was the controversy attached to whether or not it would be overtly anti-Semitic. There's still some controversy on that, of course. And then once it was released, there was the shock of this movie itself. Cinematically, visually, in terms of its spectacle, something very difficult to watch. In fact, this was just last night. I was talking to the gentleman who runs the boards for our Sunday night nationally syndicated program. He said, I just watched The Passion of the Christ. He didn't see it when it came out in the film. He rented the DVD. He was still in that state that all of us were after we watched it the first time. You went about a day or two where you were kind of reeling and these images were swirling in your mind. It got a People's Choice Award last night. Will it get an Oscar? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Gibson also thanked the fans of The Passion of the Christ.
Thanks to all the blue states, the red states, the catatonic states, everything, everyone that voted, for making this a tremendous success.
All right. Do you think it's going to get an Oscar? The People's Choice Awards, I don't know how that works, but the Academy Awards are an entirely different matter. There's the Academy. It's more of an industry thing. There's all sorts of campaigning for that award. The Oscars do carry with them a bit more prestige. When a movie is then released later, or when a director has made a movie that's Oscar material, it means something for someone's career. Do you think that The Passion of the Christ will earn an Oscar at the end of the month? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. One of the candidates for the chair of the Democratic National Committee to replace Terry McAuliffe, who is exiting, is former representative from Indiana, Tim Romer. He is pro-life. He's a Democrat. Will this make any difference if he is successful in his bid to lead the Democratic Party as a pro-lifer? Will this make any difference on how you vote, especially if you're a pro-life Democrat who has held off casting a Democratic vote from time to time because of the life issue? It's open lines for your phone calls for the rest of this hour. Also, as usual, during open lines, anything you want to talk about, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Calling from Barnhart, let's talk with Stephen. Stephen, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hello.
Hi, Stephen.
Hi. My only comment is that I'm a union construction worker and a Christian here in the metro St. Louis area, and there's been a huge amount of pressure on union workers to vote Democrat, and this sounds so exciting that we would have a chance to vote for someone that's pro-labor and also pro-life. And I think it would be very exciting. That's all I have to offer.
All right, Stephen, thank you very much. Now, that throws in one of the issues, and I haven't mentioned any of them, of course, but one of the issues that is a great attraction to people who vote Democratic. There's the labor issue. There are the various issues, such as Kristen Day mentioned a few moments ago, a position on health care. Position on welfare, position on responsible fiscal policy, position on foreign policy, position on the war. There are all sorts of positions that keep people in the Democratic Party, even when that party, up to this point, has had a very strong reputation, not altogether deserved, but a very strong reputation for being the pro-choice party. So they're Democrats for life, and I've talked to Kristen before, and I've asked her, how do you vote? Without specifics, how do you vote? She says, well, I often vote Republican because of the pro-life issue. Maybe you're just like her. If there were a pro-life head for the DNC, Tim Romer, he's thrown his hat into the ring, would it make a difference for you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Calling from St. Louis, Tim's up next. Tim, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Pastor. How are you?
Very well.
I just have a comment about The Passion of the Christ. First of all, I do think it will win Best Picture at the Oscars.
Do you?
I really do. And I think even taking away what the content is, I think the film itself, you know, the art direction, you know, all the technical aspects of the film should make it win, you know, for Best Picture, because I think just the film itself is really that good.
Well, I agree with you there. And I think I was wondering about this when the Oscars were being speculated about, maybe a couple weeks ago. And I was thinking, you know what's going to win? It's going to win one of these technical awards, cinematography. It's going to win music. It's going to win soundtrack. It's going to win one of those things. It will walk away with an Oscar or two in that.
Sure.
Will it get Best Picture? Will Jim Caviezel get Best Actor?
You know, I think so. I think so because, and I think Mel Gibson should get Best Director.
Ooh, that's the big one. That's the real one.
You know, all those other ones that you said, like Best Music, you know, of course there's beautiful music in it, the cinematography, all that stuff. From what I've seen and the other movies I've seen, just as, you know, an all-around movie, I think is the best in every aspect of those.
So how do you think it is, Tim, that the People's Choice Awards, because you seem encouraged by the news of The Passion of the Christ getting the People's Choice Award, for Best Drama Movie, how do you square this with the fact that the very same People's Choice Awards give Fahrenheit 9/11 by Michael Moore favorite movie all round?
I think it's just because Fahrenheit 9/11 is one of those for lack of a better word, like a trendy kind of like, you know, it's people have a lot of fun at poking fun at, you know, like presidents and people in the political offices like that. And, you know, I haven't seen Fahrenheit 9/11. I don't want to spend my money because on that movie. I'm curious, but I don't want to spend my own money to see it. But I think people get wrapped up in, like, you know, it's so cool, everyone should go see it, and I think it's obviously biased, but...
Tim, thank you very much for the call. Same questions for the rest of you. Do you think The Passion of the Christ will get an Oscar, and what about a pro-life head for the DNC? Chet is calling from his car. Chet, welcome.
Yes, Pastor Dodd. Pastor Todd, a moment ago, you mentioned the individual who grew up Democratic and found it difficult to say law to the party because of Christian conviction. That would be me, sir.
It would be?
Yes.
So what do you think, if there was a pro-life head, and that's a very influential position, of the Democratic National Committee, would it make any difference to you?
It most definitely, because as I said, you know, I'm partial to the Democratic Party, because I personally am not too in favor of Republican economics. I don't feel they're going to act in my best interest as a middle-class trade unionist working American. But then again, you know, there are those moral issues, as they say, that swung the vote in the favor of Bush. I had a difficult time coming to grips with who to vote for. You've heard me say that before. I think that Bush was waffling on the issue of being pro-life up until the last debate. And then he finally made a pretty firm stand on his position. I don't know if it was because of his advisors or if he was speaking from the heart. And also in that debate, Kerry pretty much blundered in stating his position on abortion. So that was kind of what swayed me not to vote along the party lines as a Democrat. But I think it was very important to have someone who's pro-life. And matter of fact, I wrote a short article in my union newsletter to that effect.
Chet, thank you. It's good to hear from you. Good to hear from you. All right, there's Chet's thoughts on this. You know, before the Christmas vacation, somebody sent me President George W. Bush's record on funding for abortion. Not so much the things that he openly came out for, but the bills that he did not veto. He hasn't vetoed anything, by the way. The bills he did not veto that furthered the cause of public funding for abortion on demand. About a page and a half of bills that further publicly funded abortion on demand. Signed by this president, this, at least by reputation, pro-life president. There's always the compromise on stem cell research that took place, what, 6 months into his first term. And some people have been saying, if I could find a pro-life Democrat, if I could find a Democrat, and there are pro-life Democrats out there to vote for, and then get behind a party that might be led, the DNC, by a pro-life Democrat, that might tip the scales for me. Maybe you're one of them. I'd like to hear from you. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. What difference do you think it will make to the Democratic Party if their leader of the party itself, prospectively Tim Romer, who's a pro-life Democrat, what difference do you think it would make to that? Would the platform change? Would the rhetoric change? Would who gets funded to be elected and run change? All those questions when we come back, more open lines.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
What's the relationship between the Oprah Winfrey Show and Pop American Christianity? How have psychology, emotionalism, and feminism left the church unmanned? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. I've written an article for the next Issues, Etc. journal titled Church is for Girls. And you can get a free complimentary copy of the next Issues, Etc. journal by calling our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. Plus, Pastor Tim Pauls has written an article titled The Problem of Pietism. Should subjective feelings trump objective truth? Find out with the next Issues, Etc. journal, 1-800-737-0172. The Wittenberg Trail feature details how Vicar Stephen Parks came to a Christ-centered understanding of baptism and the Lord's Supper. 1-800-737-0172. If you enjoy Issues, Etc., the radio show, you need to get the Issues, Etc. journal. 1-800-737-0172.
A loving God created a killer jellyfish?
Answers with Ken Ham, president of the Bible-proclaiming ministry of Answers in Genesis. Well, Ken, how could a God of love create something like a killer jellyfish?
Well, I admit many scoffers do ask this kind of question. They don't understand how the same God who made a once perfect world could make a creature that comes fully equipped to capture and kill. But Christians should remember that before the fall, humans and animals were in perfect harmony. It was the fall of Adam that brought death and suffering into this now groaning world. Keeping this in mind, there are several explanations for a jellyfish's built-in defense and attack structure. One explanation is that those things now used for defense and attack purposes could have had a different function before the fall. Another explanation is that genetically, the design information for such structures was already present before the fall, but wasn't switched on until after sin. You know, since God foreknew the fall, it's likely that he pre-programmed creatures, like the jellyfish, for the information needed to survive in a fallen world. But whatever the answer, we know one thing absolutely for sure. Before sin, everything, including jellyfish, was very good. Killer jellyfish today should remind us of how our sin has messed things up in this now fallen world.
One of the most asked questions we receive at the Answers Ministry is, where did Cain find his wife? For the full answer, read Ken Ham's free booklet at AnswersRadio.com.
This is Dr. John Tape with the Media Minute. Many children today idolize sports figures, movie stars, and rock musicians, partly because the media glorifies the wealth and glamour of these stars. However, numerous surveys have shown that there are two heroes that are admired and respected by more children than any other. That's mom and dad. More children, including teens, respect and admire their parents more than any media personality in sports or entertainment. So don't abandon your role as a hero to the media superstars. Use your status as your children's hero to set a good example. Remind your children that their real hero, above all other heroes, is Jesus Christ, who died on the cross for them. This Media Minute is brought to you by the Christian Media Literacy Institute. Please visit our website at cmli.org.
Issues, Etc. is underwritten in part locally by Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, Illinois. Christ Our Savior is located at 612 North State Street in Freeburg. The Reverend Bruce Kaseman is the pastor. Their phone number, area code 618-539-5664. Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, an Issues Etc. underwriter on AM 850 KFUO.
Really, more than any other thing I've ever worked on, when you circumvent the system, I depended on you, and you were there.
That was Mel Gibson at last night's People's Choice Award, accepting an award for Best Movie Drama, of course, the film. He wasn't talking about any of his many other movies. He was talking about The Passion of the Christ. It did win a People's Choice Award for Best Movie Drama. Fahrenheit 9/11 took Best Movie. What's going to happen in the Oscars? I think it was Bill O'Reilly did a whole thing on his website and then on his television program, then on his radio program, kind of pitting Gibson versus Moore in the Oscar battle. And we even played some audio from this a couple weeks back. Remember Rabbi Shmuley Boteach was there in that thing, and he was ranting and raving about the anti-Semitism that was in Gibson's movie and generally speaking in the rest of the world. That was just one of the controversies that swirled around this movie. Will it get an Oscar? I have no doubt that it'll probably get something for cinematography. Will Gibson get Best Director? Will the film get Best Movie? Will Jim Caviezel perhaps get Best Actor? He did, you gotta argue, pretty much carry that movie by himself. Just the course of filming the movie itself, we're talking about a guy who caught pneumonia, had his shoulder dislocated. What was the other thing that happened to him? Got hit really, really hard with canes when occasionally the pad that was protecting his back during the scourging scenes slipped. He was kind of gave his all as an actor. And he played a role that many people have attempted and pulled off in a very cheesy manner. He played it in perhaps one of the most convincing ways in modern cinematography. Do you think an Oscar's in the offing for The Passion of the Christ? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Open Lines, Issues, Etc. for the next 25 minutes of the program. Now, you can read The Real Passion of the Christ. The movie, fine and good. You can read The Real Passion of the Christ and understand all of what Christ taught in the Gospel of Matthew leading up to his passion, how all of it funnels toward the passion, the death, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ in Matthew's Gospel by getting our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for January, Discourses in Matthew, Jesus Teaches the Church, by Issues, Etc. regular guest David P. Scare from Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. The book is $29.99 plus shipping and handling. If you call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, you can ask for the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for January, Discourses in Matthew, Jesus Teaches the Church. You can browse before you buy as well, right there at our website, issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, you'll find information on this book, 1-800-325-3040. Concordia Publishing House also has two bookstores in the St. Louis area, and when you go in, mention the fact that you listen to Issues, Etc., and that you'd like to take a look at the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for January, Discourses in Matthew, 13558 South Jefferson. That's 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. The other location here on the campus of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, 801 DeMunn. If you follow the signs, look for the CPH bookstore signs, and you'll find the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for January, Discourses in Matthew. It's open lines. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The other question on the table, what if the Democratic National Committee, the National Party, gets as its head a pro-life Democrat, which may happen in the person of former Representative Tim Romer? Here's another question. What difference would that make to you if you're a pro-life Democrat and how you've been voting? Let's say you're a Republican, and the Republican National Committee, the RNC, elected as its head a pro-choice Republican. Would it make any difference to you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727 from St. Charles. Kim is on the line. Kim, welcome.
Hi. Absolutely, Kim. It would make a difference to me.
Why so?
Because I had an abortion 20 years ago, and it has shadowed and haunted my life. And it wasn't until 20 years later that I was able to come to healing with that decision in Christ and really grieve for that little baby that I destroyed. I attended the Carry On. I didn't mean to cry. Darn it. Sorry.
That's all right.
I went down to the Carry rally this year with a pro-life sign. I was thrown out. Police escorted me out, along with 50 Catholic seminarians who also went down there with pro-life signs. I'm sorry I'm not Lutheran, but I have to tell you this.
Hey, good for them. I'm glad they were there. I wish there would have been some Lutheran seminarians,
too. There were some Missouri Synod Lutherans that came up to us, and we felt such solidarity. I wish I knew their names. They somehow got inside, and I think they were thrown out as well. I don't know who they were, but God bless them. What I wanted to say was, and it kind of ties in with the passion, while we were standing, and the policewoman that escorted us out, she was very kind, and she told us that we could stand out on the sidewalk outside of the building, which we did in silence. And we endured 4 hours of heckling, of being cussed at, of having homosexuals come up and give a display to us. It was a very humiliating experience. But what was foremost in my mind that whole time of standing there were scenes from The Passion. The movie is like a moving icon, and in my head I kept imagining, oh, this is nothing. This is nothing like what Christ went through for me. And I would be really surprised if it didn't get Best Picture of the Year, but you know what? It doesn't matter because it's Best Picture of the Year according to God.
All right, and then let me just make this clear, Kim. If Tim Romer were elected to be the head of the DNC, could you then countenance the idea of voting Democratic again?
I would certainly look at all the issues. The pro-life issue is foremost in my mind. But yes, I could. The second issue would have to be marriage between a man and woman. Traditional marriage would have to be also part of his platform. Yes, of course I would.
Right.
Absolutely. My family has always been Democratic. But since I have come to terms with what I did 20 years ago, I have been voting Republican. I have no choice. And I wanted to add one little thing, that if you look in the Old Testament, I used to have a real problem with this when the Israelites would go in and they would wipe out a whole group of people, and I would think, God was bloodthirsty. But if you look at the Old Testament, when that happens, there are three things that are very abhorrent to God in those societies that he wipes out, and human sacrifice, idol worship, and rampant homosexuality are the three things. And I think that is what our country is absolutely plagued with.
Kim, thank you so much for your thoughts.
Good caller. Very good. Very good.
By the way, too, and she's right about the Old Testament, the Canaanite religions not only involved human sacrifice, but in the worship of Molech, it was child sacrifice, infant sacrifice, in fact, as a regular course of the worship of Molech in the ancient Canaanite. And this is what God is contending with when his people come into the land. She's absolutely right. That was just about one of the best explanations of what's going on in the Old Testament with all the war and violence that we've ever gotten on this program from Kim calling in on a completely different issue. Thank you very much. What about the rest of you? She has registered her opinion on two things. One, Passion of the Christ ought to get Best Picture. Do you think it will? And two, if you are a pro-life Democrat who have, like Kim or Kristen or Chet, who called before, have been from time to time holding off, standing there in the polling place saying, what do I do? How do I vote? Would having a pro-life Democrat at the head of the DNC make a difference for you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Carolyn calls from her car. Carolyn, welcome.
Hi. Yes, my comment, too, is on voting for a pro-life Democratic president. It is a hard issue. I agree with Kim. It's a very hard issue. You cannot vote if someone is not pro-life. It is totally against our Christian nature to do something like that. But then on the other hand, too, we consider, my husband is in construction in a Democratic Party always leans to protect the people in the unions. And so we too are voting Republican, basically, because there is no question of who you're going to vote for. You cannot vote for someone who is going to take a life.
In your thinking, Carolyn, how big, say 1 to 10, how big of a change would it be if Representative Tim Romer were actually elected head of the DNC? How big of a change in your mind would that be for your Democratic Party?
I have a huge change. It would. It would be a huge change. We need someone who is pro-life and who still represents the Democratic Party.
Carolyn, thank you for the call. Let's hear from the rest of you as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Look, what are we doing here? We've been talking about this for 20 minutes. We've had Chet, we've had Kristen, I'll count Kristen as our guest in the first hour, the first part of the hour as one, too. We had Kim, and we had Carolyn. That's four callers who have all said the same thing. It would make a difference to them to have a pro-life head of the Democratic National Committee. It would actually make a difference in how they vote. It sounds to me, now this is, of course, is unscientific. This is not maybe even a representative sample, but in the audience that we have, to have four calls on this issue all chiming together like this, it does tell me something. You know, one call for every 1,000 people, who knows? That's how they tend to calculate these things in matters of opinion. There are a lot of Democrats out there who are waiting to return to their party, who are waiting to vote for their party again. And what may tip the scales for them is whether the party signals a willingness to welcome pro-lifers, to perhaps even conciliate in the direction of pro-lifers, to be truly the term that was used by Kristen Day a little bit before, inclusive of pro-lifers. Even just that is significant for them. What about you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. 2727. Bob calls from his car. Bob, welcome.
Hello.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Very well.
I would like to ask you this question. What do you think the law should be changed to? You know, when you're talking about pro-life, you're talking about some specific legislation that you're seeking, I believe. What do you think the law should be in terms of penalty for a doctor who performs an abortion, or anyone else for that matter, and the woman who has an abortion? What do you think the law should have as a penalty? Because otherwise it doesn't mean anything.
You're absolutely right. It doesn't mean anything without a real penalty that is not just on the books, but also is actually enacted, that actually gets applied. So you're absolutely right there, Bob. Well, first of all, I'm not talking about any specific legislation, not in the last 20 minutes. I'm just talking about whether or not Tim Romer might possibly be the first pro-life head of the Democratic National Committee in a long, long time. That's all I'm talking about. But as a pro-lifer, you ask me what should happen in terms of penalty. Okay, let's say we actually talked about this some weeks back. It was spurred by a conversation that we played for you between it was from the Laura Ingraham Show, and it involved Chris Matthews, who's a commentator for MSNBC. And he raised the very same question. He said, look, pro-lifers have got to come clean on the issue of the penalty. They've got to come clean. If you want Roe v. Wade overturned, let's just say in the magical world, and I think, you know, at this point, it's a dream we can dream about, but it's not going to happen anytime soon. But in the magical world where Roe v. Wade would be overturned, and abortion in certain states were recriminalized, what penalty would you attach to the abortionist, to the doctor himself, to the woman? You know, the answer that Laura Ingraham gave was evasive, in my opinion. She said, no, the woman doesn't get any penalty because she's a second victim. No one's denying that a woman is a second victim. Talk to any woman who's had an abortion. They will tell you the first victim was their child. They, too, were also a victim of this. But if they have a willingly seek out an abortion and it's illegal, they're also a perpetrator. Just in the same way, you could argue that the drug addict is a victim of his own abuse, but he's also a criminal. And that doesn't stop us from putting drug addicts in prison. What do you do with the penalty? Well, the penalty has to fit the crime. We talked with Dr. Montgomery. We played some of what Chris Matthews had to say there. We said Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, he's a law professor. He's a human rights lawyer internationally. What do you think? And he said the penalty has to fit the crime and the penalty has to be applied. And the states that would recriminalize abortion would have to say this is a criminal endeavor, that the law should specify a penalty for an abortionist. I asked him, well, what is it going to be? Accessory to murder, manslaughter, first-degree murder, how do you count it? And I don't know if he was willing to be pinned down there, but he simply did, and I do agree with him, that if abortion is recriminalized, it cannot be recriminalized and then say, but when you have an abortion, the doctor gets a fine and the woman walks away scot-free. If it's a crime tantamount to murder or the taking of innocent life in some other form, however legally defined, then there ought to be a penalty for it. How would I write the penalty? I don't know. I might say for the doctor, any other, I would say, what's a comparable thing for a doctor who knowingly, either say through neglect or through criminal negligence, causes the death of a patient? Sounds like a good penalty to me. Pull his license? It's a good place to begin. Pay a fine? Yes. Some jail time? Got no problem with that either. And let the judges decide. For the woman, what would you do with someone who kills their own child? A pretty big crime, deserving a pretty big penalty. Look, now, am I comfortable saying this? No. Would this be a legal nightmare? Of course it would. But I'm the guy who constantly calls for consistency. Can I suddenly then say, oh, it should be a crime without a penalty? No. I'm compelled to say it would have to have a penalty attached. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And for that penalty, let's let the legal experts find comparable crimes. Like a real estate agent going out and finding comparable houses, find comparable crimes, what penalties attached to them. There you go. That's my answer. Bruce is calling from his car. Bruce, welcome.
Yes, Todd. This what I was wondering, while I can certainly appreciate our pro-life Democrat friends would be encouraged by a potential pro-life DNC chairman, if the Democrats do not nominate a pro-life Democratic candidate, what good is that?
Well, I think it is... I don't think anyone who's called today saying that it would change their voting have been saying they would suddenly go and vote the straight party ticket Democrat. I don't think anyone's saying that, but it would, they say it would make a difference on how they would vote. They would feel welcomed back into the party to some degree. And I still think, it sounds like from the people who called us, they'd still be voting pro-life. They wouldn't be voting for pro-choice candidates.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Would it make a difference to you, Bruce, if the Republican National Committee, for whatever reason, chose a pro-choice head for their party?
It would be discouraging. I wouldn't be happy about it, but so long as the platform remained pro-life and the candidate was pro-life, I could live with that. What I couldn't live with is a pro-choice candidate.
Bruce, thank you very much. 10 minutes left in open lines, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You know, I think about that. If the RNC, and they've done stupid things like this before, let's just look at this. Who is going to run for president in 2008? First of all, if you don't have someone now, chances are you're not going to have someone who's really strong 4 years from now. That's my philosophy there. You got to have that candidate 4 years in advance. So if you don't have someone now, who's it going to be? Who are the biggest, brightest lights to run for president to succeed George W. Bush or to attempt to do so? All of them, well, not all of them, but many of them are pro-choice Republicans. Rudolph Giuliani, pro-choice Republican. Colin Powell, pro-choice Republican. Let's toss a lady in there. Let's say that Condoleezza Rice decides that she would like to run for president and not head up the NFL. And after her stint as, my goodness, she's been Secretary of State. She's been Chief Political Advisor. If all things go as planned here, she could run for president. She's pro-choice. It is not unconscionable that the Republican National Committee would, to keep things consistent and to kind of, okay, can we do this? Can we elect a pro-choice Republican, fiscally, socially conservative? Foreign policy, all in line, but pro-choice. Can we elect a Rudolph Giuliani to elect a head for the RNC who is also pro-choice? It's not unconscionable. Bill is calling from his car. Bill, welcome.
Yeah, you're talking about the penalty phase, and it just seems to me we've had a recent example with the Lacey Peterson conviction. If life begins at conception, how can it be anything but murder?
Agreed. Agreed, Bill. And that kind of legislation, now Bob called before talking about legislation, that kind of legislation, the Lacey and Connor law, is getting close to the question of what's the penalty when you take two lives? So if the penalty for taking the life of the mother and her unborn child is two counts of murder, what if the crime is not taking the life of the mother, but taking the life of the unborn child? Well, if we're going to be consistent, and of course this is where the big inconsistency in the law exists today in the United States, we're going to be consistent, it's one count of murder. Stan's calling from his car. Stan, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yeah, thank you, Pastor. Psalm 139 specifically clarifies anybody that has any doubts about when life begins as a human being. And the Bible is specifically clear, if man sheds man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. And that would be the mother and the doctor, both of them guilty of first-degree murder.
Stan, thank you. Now, here's one caveat on that. okay? First of all, the Bible in that passage, I think they're from Genesis, early chapters of Genesis, does not command the death penalty. It permits the death penalty, and there's a huge difference there. It permits rightly instituted governments and authorities, not just anybody, but rightly instituted governments and authorities, and you have to read it in light of Romans chapter 13, he does not bear the sword in vain, to justly administer the death sentence. Just because a government can and it's permitted to carry out a death sentence doesn't mean that it must. So there's no command there. Now, with that said, here's a mitigating factor. And this was mentioned by Dr. John Warwick Montgomery when we were talking about the penalties for a recriminalized crime of abortion. After Roe, what? He said, well, there may be mitigating factors. Many women do go in for the abortion under duress. In some cases, under extreme duress. Some women do have abortions in a cavalier manner, as cavalier as you can be when you're going in for the extermination of your unborn child. But more cavalierly than, say, a woman, we've talked with Olivia Gans, who tells her story. Three doctors they visit. All three doctors say, get an abortion. You're stupid if you don't do it. The husband says, if you don't do this, you're ruining your... I mean, the boyfriend says, if you don't do this, you're ruining your life. After a couple days of this, she couldn't think straight. She was under duress. That might be a mitigating factor in the penalty phase. The crime has still been committed. What should the penalty be if the crime is committed under duress? That's the only thing I would add into there what Stan had to say. Okay, tomorrow we're going to have open lines as well for you. And I've got a question that I want you to chew on for the next 24 hours. It's a question that I think probably every parent might want to consider at some point. We all have dreams for our kids, don't we? What they're going to grow up and be. My wife and I were just talking about this. We cannot imagine what my son will grow up to be at this point. We just don't know. What do you think he'll be? We don't know. What if your son wanted to be a pastor? Would you encourage your son or your grandson to become a pastor? Would you go out of your way to either encourage or discourage him to enter the public ministry? Think about it. Low pay, low esteem for in the eye of the public. Pretty thankless job. A job that is not of high repute in many places. What about if your daughter, say you don't have sons or grandsons, what if your daughter or granddaughter wanted to marry a pastor? That's the open line question for tomorrow. I want you to think about it in the intervening 24 hours. And when we come back tomorrow, I want your answer to those questions. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.